All right, welcome back in. This is Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on the Infinity Sports Network. And now joining us here on behalf of Westwood One, obviously with all their great coverage for the NCAA tournament. I was just actually listening to him this past weekend for the Auburn-Michigan State game with all the studio coverage. He's also the play-by-play voice of the Raiders, and that is Jason Harwood. Jason, how are you?
I don't have a hat like you, though.
No.
It's a very impressive thing. I actually thought about, I've never thought about buying
well,
one.
I don't know why I was going to say that.
I grew up in Michigan, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and so, my college roommate and one of my good friends is also the play-by-play voice of the Tigers, too.
Oh, nice.
So Jason Benetti and his second year with the Tigers. But yeah, so I am a big Alan Trammell, Lou Whitaker, Cecil Fielder guy.
Well, I think I'm the OG Tarek Skubal fan because my baseball team,
You've been rocked the first two outings. Yeah, not so good.
You know, friends of the show, so calm down. It's early in the season. He just gave you a Cy Young and a great season. You know, relax a little bit, but my baseball fantasy baseball team's name is Scooby Dooby Doo, and I traded for him when he was relatively unknown, and I've kept him for years. So I am a Tarek Skubal degenerate.
So my fantasy football name used to be Let's Get Denarted because I was a huge Denard Robinson fan. So it's very, very. I like Scooby Scooby Doo though. That's very good.
Are you a Michigan football fan?
I did. Yeah. So I grew up in Michigan. I grew up a huge Michigan fan. My uncle was the one who got me into sports. He came into the family and. When I was about 8 or 9, he took me to my first Michigan game. We'd go all the time. And then when I got into high school, he'd take me almost every week. And so when the first time I went to Syracuse, he was the one who took me and, we'd take road trips to look at colleges that we were going to go to. And, it was awesome.
Yeah. There could be a picture of me on the internet somewhere where I am jumping onto the field after Michigan beat Ohio State 2 years ago in the Big House. After having a few pops and I was storming the field afterwards, and the Ohio State fan, I think his name is Bucknut or something.
Yeah, Bucknut.
Ran right past him and screamed, "OHNO!" And he was not too appreciative of that.
Yeah, Bucknut's very fan. So it's my one of my radio partners with SiriusXM, Ben Hartsock, is an Ohio State alum. He was on the 02 national championship team. And the year that Michigan broke the streak, what was that, 21?
Mm-hmm.
Was that the year that they broke the streak? We also worked at the time with John Jansen, who's a good friend of ours.
Love
and
John.
So he went with John and was on the field when Michigan won, and then everyone stormed the field. And I'm like, dude, would you convert to be a Michigan fan? You stormed the field. He's like, I wanted to experience it. I'm like, you're a Buckeye. And Ohio State hasn't won since. So it's his fault.
I love that. That's great. We'll start floating that in the Ohio State community. He'll get canceled there.
He knows. He knows. When he's in the building, they lose.
All right. Let's get to the Raiders. Jason Harwood. We'll talk Final Four as well. I've been sitting here, and when Shedeur Sanders comes up, I say the Cleveland Browns should draft him at 2 because I think Cam Ward's going 1. If the Browns passing him, I think the Giants should draft him at 3. But even Adam Schefter the other day said it's starting to feel like the Browns and the Giants, and who knows what's true, but it's Schefter saying it, so it matters. But it's starting to feel like the Browns and the Giants are both going to pass on Shedeur. What do you think the level of interest is from the Raiders?
I think there's interest. I don't think so. You know, a couple things here. People have pointed to when Pete Carroll drafted Russell Wilson and they're like, they're not afraid to bring in a quarterback. Well, Matt Flynn got a contract, but it wasn't like Tom Brady money, and Russell Wilson wasn't a first round top 10 pick. He was a third round pick. So I don't think those things are comparable. I do think you look around the league though, and you see what the Falcons did last year, and everyone criticized them for it, and rightfully so, because it didn't work out the way that, or maybe it actually worked out the way they thought it would. When you pay Kirk Cousins all that money, you decide, hey, we're going to have a backup plan just in case it doesn't work, because who knows when we're going to be drafting top 10 again. And the plan in that case with the backup is important because they've got their guy, whether Penix works or not, they've got their guy of the future. And so if Shedeur Sanders is sitting there and the Raiders like him, I don't think having guaranteed money for Geno Smith for the next 2 years prohibits you from drafting Shedeur Sanders if you think he's going to be a great player of the future.
And let's also be real. Geno Smith's a solid quarterback. He's a serviceable quarterback, but he's not someone that I could sit there and go, he's their franchise quarterback for the future.
Well, because he's 35. He's going to be 35 years old.
And you've got a coach who's going to be,
and you've got a coach who's going to be the oldest coach in the history of the NFL week one. And you've got all those things at play. But I don't know how you feel, Zach. I'm a big believer because everyone's like, you can't draft a running back 6. And I'm like, yes, you can. You can't draft Tedrick McMillan. Yes, you can. I am a big believer of if the player you draft is good to great, you never care A, what position, or B, what number you drafted them, because you don't remember the people who you could have drafted because the guy you drafted is great. So you can draft Ashton Jeanty if he's great. You can draft Shedeur Sanders if he turns out to be good, and you'll never worry about it.
Well, here's what I also say. If Shedeur is off the board, then at 6, and I've done mock drafts for the last 5 weeks, and we've done these exercises, I think they have to take Jeanty. And the reason I say that is just because even though Brock Bowers had an unbelievable rookie season, because of the limitations of Geno Smith, I then look at Ashton Jeanty becoming the face and the focal point of the offense. And when I talked to Ashton back in September, I want to say, I said to him, you know, who are the running backs that you grew up and you studied? And he goes, Alvin Kamara and Marshawn Lynch. And Pete Carroll and Marshawn Lynch had,
Sure.
there's a big connection there.
Well, and he breaks plays. I mean, Alvin Kamara is explosive. He's explosive. I mean, I grew up in Detroit. I grew up a Barry Sanders fan. He's my favorite athlete of all time. I'm not saying that Ashton's doing that, but like you go back and you watch the Washington State game, you go back and watch any of those games the first 7, 8 weeks of the season, the amount of plays that he makes that should go for three or four,
Oh, yeah.
that go for 74
Breaking like eight
are
tackles.
unbelievable. And then
Stupid.
so, and again, does that go to the NFL? Who knows? But as a play-by-play announcer, I'm selfish and I'd like them to draft Ashton Jeanty.
So you grew up as a Lions fan,
I did.
Jason
Yeah.
Horowitz. Where are you at with their trajectory right now? Because the last 2 years have been awesome, but they're still chasing that Super Bowl.
They are. And you know, five turnovers against the Commanders is detrimental, and the blown halftime lead against San Francisco is one that you'll never forget. So those are two big time blunders for a team that probably should have played in the Super Bowl both times. So the question is the window closed? I think the answer is no. You've got Jared Goff, and people kind of scoff at that, but Jared's been great. You've got really good receivers, good offensive line. But I think it's also to be determined how much of a loss losing both coordinators is. Ben Johnson's a guy that everyone wanted. And Aaron Glenn, you know, yes, they gave up a lot, but they couldn't the amount of plays they made at the end of the season with the defensive players that they had lost was pretty remarkable. So we'll see.
Let me squeeze in the final four and then we'll get you out of here, Jason Horowitz. I know you're a storyline guy. I look at the storylines of this final four. Old guard, new guard. You got Bruce Pearl up against Todd Golden. You got Kelvin Sampson up against Sean Shire. You have Cooper Flagg, who's the best player in the tournament, but Walter Clayton Jr., who's the most exciting, in my opinion. Duke or the field, you know, is another big one. What's the most intriguing storyline to you?
Well, it's funny. Jani Broome's health isn't, you know, he says he's fine. We talked to him yesterday. We'll air that interview tomorrow night during the pregame.
Bruce Pearl told me he was good.
Yeah, he's
Yeah.
he told me he's fine. But that pad, whatever is under his sleeve, is
How fine
big.
are you?
Yeah, is big. Now, he also came back last week and played, and we had a conversation about what he said to his parents, and we had a conversation about he's like, I'm coming back in. They're like, all right, I guess I'm checking back in. So like he knew the moment, and he loved every part of it. But like, I think that's significant. His injury, I think, is significant. But I also think Houston's the one team that nobody's really talking about. And the
100%.
fact that they've lost one time since November, and it's not like they lost one time in Conference USA or America. They lost one time in the Big 12. And I think they're good enough to win the whole thing.
I know you got to run. Last one, real quickly. Jason Horowitz from Russell One does a great job. Also, the voice of the Raiders. The Pete Carroll hire. I thought it was a good hire. I know this is not going to be a hire where he's going to be here for 6, 7 years. I'm looking
He could
for
be. Why
maybe.
not?
That's tough to know when you're in your mid. He looks young,
Hey,
but
listen,
you're in the mid
not to
70s.
make things morbid. My mom passed away at 64 the year she thought she was going to retire. You never know.
Sure.
And that dude's got energy for ages. So, like, to say that Pete Carroll can't coach to 79,
Okay, you're not getting a decade out of him.
Yeah,
Is that
probably
fair?
not.
So
Probably not. I
I'm
hope I
just
still have a decade left.
I think you're good. You have a lot of energy. I think that Pete Carroll needs to bring stability back to the Raiders. That's what
Yes.
I look for. What do you look for?
That energy, stability, and I think he brings a level of you know, they brought in Josh McDaniels, the Patriots way didn't work. Then Antonio Pierce had the whole aspect of he grew up a Raiders fan,
Yeah.
they wanted to bring the Raiders back, but there was nothing from an offensive standpoint, and then there was conflict and Devontae's gone. I think with Pete Carroll, you bring in a guy who's a proven commodity, who knows what to at least get to where you're competing for the playoffs every year, because he did that every year in Seattle. And then from there, can you overtake Mahomes? Can you overtake Herbert? That's the next question. But at least to get back to that, we know we can win 8, 9, 10 games. That's what you're looking for.
Well, we appreciate the time. Thanks so much,
Absolutely,
Jason.
dude.
And that conversation with Jason Horowitz of Westwood One, and also being the voice of the Raiders on the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network for Westwood One's Radio Row, was sponsored by Ego, tool that deliver or exceed the power and performance of gas without the noise, fuss, and fumes. For any outdoor challenge, count on Ego tools to deliver the power, performance, and innovation you need. Ego. Power beyond belief. Also, it's time to ask the pros, or you, the listener, gets to ask us a question, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Simply tweet your question at INFSportsNet or at Zach Gelb using the hashtag AskThePros. Be listening later in the show. We might answer your question. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Stu, three things from that conversation with Jason Horowitz. Number one, let's start with Pete Carroll, because you are our degenerate Raider fan. Excuse me, a resident Raider fan. I should not say degenerate Raider fan. When you look at Pete Carroll, three-year contract.
Yeah.
If I told you the over-under is 3.5 years for Pete Carroll as the coach of the Raiders, take the over.
That's right on the line. I would say over, but I'd say four.
Okay.
Like just over.
So you don't think it's going to five?
I do not.
So you think there's a four-year run for Pete Carroll?
Yes.
What are you hoping? If you had to give me like one word. My word was stability.
So it's a good word.
So use a different
word.
Yeah,
not stability.
If there's one word that you could kind of hope that Pete Carroll brings to the Raiders, that word is?
I would say that it's just relevant, and not relevant in the way of
Zach Gill making jokes about them.
Exactly.
for being irrelevant.
Like, they're not irrelevant, but they're also relevant in a bad way. So I want relevance like in a good way, relevance where they're at least like competing for, you know, being above average. They don't even have to make the playoffs, but they have to be like in the conversation, not making fools of themselves, because that's what we see a lot from the Raiders.
So we know that the Raiders are in a division where they're looking up right now.
Yeah.
You got Mahomes, you got Andy Reid. Then you got Sean Payton, and you got Bo Nix. You got Jim Harbaugh, and you got Justin Herbert. If I tell you this is the Pete Carroll three-year run, do you take it? Just hear me out in the 3 years. 7 wins in year number one. Year number two, 8-9. Year number three, 9-8. And walks off into the sunset and then says, that's it. But no playoffs in any of those 3 years.
That's fine. I mean, I'm not, you know.
What a low bar.
It does sound like loser energy, you know, like, oh, 3 years, don't make the playoffs. But honestly, if they have three decent years and they're not in the battle of, you know, winning 3, 4, 5 games, like if they're getting close to 10 wins all three of those years, like, yeah, I'll take that right now. And you would hope that it develops into a program and then they can find someone to replace them that'll kind of carry the torch, if you will.
So in the last 22 years, 23 years ago, they lost to the Super Bowl to Tampa Bay, John Gruden, right? And that was a disaster for them. So if I quickly just did that math right, it's been 22 years, 23 years since that Super Bowl, but 22 seasons played.
Yep.
They've made the playoffs twice.
Twice. 0-2 in the playoffs.
12-4 lost in the wild card round, but that was the year Derek Carr got hurt, right?
Yes.
And then 10-7, and they lost to Cincinnati.
Yes.
Where they were driving and had a chance to go win the game on the road in Cincinnati. Cincinnati goes on to the Super Bowl. The Raiders in that stretch, 4-12, 5-11, 4-12, 2-14, 4-12. Stu may die by the end of this. 5-11, 5-11, 8-8, 8-8, 4-12, 4-12, 3-13, 7-9, 12-4, 6-10, 4-12, 7-9, 8-8, 10-7, 6-11, 8-9, and 4-13.
Yeah.
I could see, even though that's an incredibly low bar, where it's only, well, be improving from 4-7 if they did it in year one, because they only had 4 wins last year. If I only then tell you there's 2 more years of Pete Carroll and he only goes 1 win improvement each year, 8 and 9, it would, outside of the 2 years they make the playoffs, put him in some of the best years of the Raiders in the last 22 years.
You're
that's
not wrong.
Sad.
It's sad, but it's not wrong. That's just how it's been. And they keep having these coaches where they have them for a couple years and then they get rid of them because they bought them out.
Do they frustrate you anymore? Or are you
just numb to it? I'm numb to it.
Are you really?
I'm numb to it, yeah.
So when they get blown out in one of these games, you're not yelling and kicking and screaming?
That's not true. I am, but it's probably more subdued than it was when I was
at least younger,
and I thought they had much more higher hope than they really do.
I maybe need to get into cahoots with your girlfriend and see if that's a valid, fair, truthful scouting report of what Stu just kind of gave us. I wonder what her perspective is of what you're like watching a Raiders game.
I think it would be that. I think I get more frustrated. I know you're going to hate that. I get more frustrated with the soccer. The soccer is what really puts me over the top.
That's a new love.
And the Yankees probably are right after that.
Yeah, because the Yankees are good.
Yeah.
Since 2009, I haven't won a World
Series. They haven't done anything. By their standards, they haven't done anything. So.
All right, the final part of that. Do you agree that it feels that either Ashton Jeanty or Shedeur Sanders will be the pick at 6 for the Raiders?
Genty, yes, I don't think Shador is going to be the guy, even if he's there. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling that even if the Giants do not take him at three,
someone will trade up.
No, I think they'll just not take a quarter. I think the Geno stuff yesterday, the extension yesterday, I just have a hunch, a gut feeling that they're not going to go with a quarterback.
I think those are the two players. Now, I don't know if Shador will be there. So if Shador's not there, then they're going with Genty.
Yeah.
But I think if I'm running the Raiders, priority one would be Shador. And then if it's not Shador, it would be Ashton Genty. And quite frankly, if I had to give you a third, and I don't think he'll be there because I think he'll go to the Jaguars, then maybe a Mason Graham. But you also just got Christian Wilkins. You know, Mad Max is coming on back on the contract extension. But I think the two offensive players they need to consider, Shador, Ashton Genty, and then if not, it needs to be a defensive player. And that defensive player, the first one I would think of that would be in reach potentially there, could be there, would be Mason Graham. But I'd be very surprised if you told me I got two guesses for the Raiders, if it's not either Shador Sanders or if it's Ashton Genty, and I'm leaning now that it is Ashton Genty. All righty, 15 past the hour. Zach Gelb here with you on the Infinity Sports Network. We are coming to you live from the Convention Center in San Antonio for Westwood One's coverage of the Final Four. We will take a break. We'll do a news brief when we come on back. Chris Mack still going to join us coming up in a half hour from now, and then a big guest coming up at 4:20 p.m. Central today, 5:20 p.m. Eastern, and 2:20 p.m. Pacific. I sound like a local program guide giving out all those times. Sometimes when they used to play on my Sirius show when they would not have us airing live in the 6 to 10 p.m. Eastern time slot, we'll have Alabama head coach Nate Oates. So a whole lot more to do coming on back from San Antonio after these short messages.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show. Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
Werner is the official ladder of NCAA March Madness and the official ladder of construction professionals everywhere. Conquer new heights with Werner, available nationally at the Home Depot. News brief time. Let's start it off with Diana Rossini and Chase Daniel, which, by the way, I think is my least favorite social media podcast. The actual podcast may be good, but the social media clips, I just sound as if it feels like if Chase Daniel did an edible before this, because every time Diana Rossini says something, he thinks it's the most like earth-shattering news, and he can never be understanding of what it was actually being said by Diana Rossini. He's like, what? Huh? You sure? How about that? Oh, it drives me nuts. So let's listen up to the next installment of Diana Rossini and Chase Daniel, this time talking about the Tush Push on the Scoop City podcast, which I'm a big fan of, if you can't tell.
What is the number one reason you can say that the Tush Push will probably be banned in 2025?
Roger Goodell does not like the play. He thinks it's ugly. He doesn't think it's a football play. Look, Sean Payton stood up. He's for the Tush Push. He said, there's a better chance of us getting in a car wreck on the drive to the link than I believe it is for these players to be injured in the Tush Push.
He said that.
The fact that this was tabled tells me that they're going to ban the Tush Push.
This year.
This year. They're going to find a way to get it out of football.
Why?
Some of them want to be in line with Roger Goodell. I think some believe it's an ugly play. And I think whether or not they'll admit it or not, if you can't beat it, ban it.
Well, that is so freaking soft, Diana.
It's soft, but it's the reality.
It's because the Eagles won the freaking Super Bowl.
Jealousy, baby.
Oh, my gosh.
It's almost like from, like, dude, where's my car? What? Dude, where's my car? What? Oh, that's so soft. Oh. Ugh. Chase Daniel, just on this podcast, he's fine talking football, but on this podcast, he is insufferable, and it seems as if he had like 10 joints every time before he goes and records this Scoop City podcast. Let's go to Liam Cohen Duval, Sirius XM NFL Radio, and how they're helping Trevor Lawrence.
Really, we're diving into his footwork, some of those mechanics, and then obviously once we get into the building, some of the football aspects, right? The formations, the motions, the shifts. But for us to help him truly, also from a schematic standpoint, man, we've got to be able to run the football a little bit better, right? Give him some help from that standpoint, take a little pressure off while also playing some good sound, fundamental, hard defense on the other side of the ball to be able to, you know, ultimately get the best out of our quarterback. We got to be able to help.
He got a little Gruden in him there when he started to go play some sound, fundamental football, man. All right? He got a little Chucky there with John Gruden. I think John Gruden is now back to his stock booming, Stu. So he linked up with Barstool. He's doing these unboxings. When he got canceled, I had a huge John Gruden bobblehead from a sponsorship that I used to have with Corona. And that thing could have sold for a few thousand. Then when the emails and all that stuff came out, the price went... Chase Daniels probably like, when he hears those sound effects. What just exploded? Oh, that's weak. But anyway, I think the price now on that Chucky bobblehead is going on up. So maybe I'm going to go put that on Facebook Marketplace or something and sell it. But there is Liam Cohen of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Let's go to Arthur Blank on the NFL Network. He discussed his meeting with Kirk Cousins, as Kirk Cousins is the backup quarterback, paid a lot of money by the Atlanta Falcons. But clearly he wants to be a starting quarterback in this league once again.
I think he made it clear that, you know, in his best interest would be to have an opportunity to, you know, test free agency. And I understood why. But he also understands that we have a contract and we've paid him a great deal of money. He understands that. So he understood our, you know, our position as well.
Yeah, I kind of understand it. If you're the Falcons, you don't want to just give him away for nothing. You know that Michael Penix Jr. is your guy. There is some maybe injury concerns, though, with Michael Penix Jr. And you're not just going to give Kirk away for free. And I think you're trying to wait till you get a leverage situation. And, you know, is it Cleveland? That would be probably my best guess. Could someone maybe get hurt, like with what happened to Minnesota years ago, where it was, who was the quarterback? Teddy Bridgewater got hurt. And then it was Sam Bradford that got traded for a first-round pick for somehow, from the Philadelphia Eagles to the Minnesota Vikings. So maybe you're waiting for one of those situations where a team ends up getting desperate. Let's go to Dan Campbell. Can Aaron Glenn turn the Jets around? Probably not, but let's hear.
You got to be able to do what you need to do to build it from the ground up. AG's been around some phenomenal coaches, and I'm not talking about me. That's not – Bill Parcells, Sean Payton, I mean, this guy gets it. He's been around the best at building and sustaining. So you need a leader, man. You need a leader, and you need a guy who can hold people accountable, has a vision for where you want to go, and allow him to do that. And he's got every bit of that. And so as long as he's got the support, AG will turn that thing around. There's no question, man. He's an unbelievable leader. He's an even better person. And he's the type of guy that makes people want to rally around him. He's going to bring the right type of people around him. He's already done it with the coaches. And he'll bring the right kind of players. Look, if he can't, nobody can. That's my opinion.
And that's the big thing. And Dan Campbell basically said it. You got to allow him to do his job. And that is, we hear what's said about Woody Johnson with him being a meddling owner. Let's go to Todd Golden on building this roster with the Florida Gators.
After the first year, we were very active, you know, in the transfer portal, and we were fortunate enough to get Walter Clayton, to get Zion Pullen, Tyree Samuel, Micah Hand-Lockton specifically. Great job keeping our nucleus, and then obviously just the addition of Elijah, you know, Ruben and Sam, that group, you just really finished this team. And, you know, we have great guys that are unselfish, that enjoy playing together. I think our staff's done a good job defining roles so everybody understands what their job is to help us win.
And then let's go from Todd Golden to a man that kind of shaped Todd Golden. That's Bruce Pearl, who used to coach him. And also Todd Golden did coach underneath Bruce Pearl on here's Bruce Pearl making the Final Four once again at Auburn.
This is uncharted waters for Auburn men's basketball. We had some great moments in our history, great coaches, Sonny Smith and Cliff Ellis, great players, and Charles Barkley and Chuck Person and several others, but no real sustained great success. And here we are at the Final Four.
And he's done a wonderful job, both him and Kelvin Sampson, doing what they have done in Auburn and also Houston, respectively. Talking about Kelvin Sampson, so respected here at the Final Four. Here's Kelvin Sampson on his reasons for their success with the Cougars.
There's one sign that you'll see a lot in our building. It just says culture. It's how you do anything is how you do everything, right? Being on time, treating people with respect, having the right attitude every day, giving great effort every day and whatever it is you're asked to do. And our kids are pretty good at that.
And then let's go to John Shire, you know, Duke legend, and now is their head basketball coach. Has some high praise for Kelvin Sampson.
For me, year one when I got the coaching job at Duke, you're trying to figure out who to scrimmage and what you can do. And we sought out scrimmaging Houston. And that was the respect that I had for Coach Sampson, Houston's program, what they stand for. And, you know, to be here competing against them, it's an honor.
And then finally, last one, we go to another college basketball coach who I really like, and he just walked away from the game in the middle of the season. That's Jim Larranaga. He was on the Coach L Show. You know what? I'm on this station every week with Hockman and Crowder. This is called the Coach L Show with Hockman and Crowder. When I'm on with them, they should call it the Zach Gelb Show with Hockman and Crowder. I do a weekly with them each and every week. So I'm going to bring this up to those two knuckleheads next time I go on. I'm going to smack them around. But Stu, have you had a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, I would imagine, in your life?
Yes, of course. I have had many, not as many as I did when I was, you know, younger, but I've had many peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
You know, Hickey has a peanut butter and jelly sandwich every day.
I know.
If not two.
It's wild. I can't imagine in your 30s doing that.
Well, Ryan Hot Take Hickey probably, as Stu probably has it sometimes, a sports stroke when watching the Raiders. This is what probably Ryan Hickey was having, a peanut butter stroke, when he heard this audio from Coach L the other day on the Coach L Show with Hockman and Crowder.
I have never had a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
How's that possible?
I'll have a jelly sandwich.
What?
You know, I used to love Reese's peanut butter cups. I love peanut butter with chocolate, but I've never had a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Coach, it's almost impossible to go through life without having a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Even as a kid, you never had peanut butter and jelly?
No, not one time. I told you, I had a bite of one.
Lord.
I had a bite once, and no, not for me. Never had another one.
Lord, you know, the Reese's peanut butter cups, they just came out with peanut butter and jelly.
No way.
Reese's peanut butter cups. Yeah, it just came out like a couple weeks ago.
That will fail. There's no way you're going to eat peanut butter and jelly and chocolate. Come on.
So hot take here, peanut butter and chocolate, I love. Peanut butter, I love. When I was a kid, I would just have on, I think it was multigrain bread. My mom did not like serving me white bread, but just peanut butter. I was not a fan of peanut butter and jelly together. Like, I've had a peanut butter and jelly sandwich before, but I'm more of just a strictly peanut butter guy on the sandwich. All right, we'll take a break. That's a news brief. It is Zach Gelb Show from Westwood One's Radio Row. We will come on back. Chris Mack is going to join us on set. Let's send the back to our New York City headquarters first.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
All righty, rocking and rolling. We continue day number two, Westwood One's coverage of the NCAA tournament, the Final Four on Radio Row. It is Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on the Infinity Sports Network. And now joining us is the head men's basketball coach at the College of Charleston. And that, of course, is Chris Mack here with us. Coach, appreciate the time. How you been?
I've been great. Zach, thanks for having me.
Well, I appreciate you coming on. So here at the Final Four, I'm going to start with Florida, because they were the team going into this tournament that I thought was playing the best basketball, even though I thought Duke was the best team. How do you try to slow down someone like Walter Clayton Jr. when, even when he's not on, there's moments at the end where he just pops off and takes over a game?
He's been amazing. You know, we actually scrimmaged Florida in our first behind closed doors scrimmages here. It was our first taste of playing somebody different. And so we traveled down to Gainesville and we played them. And first of all, their size is unlike anything I've really ever seen. You know, warmups, they look like an NBA team. I don't think Walter played that hard against us in that day, and they absolutely steamrolled us. You know, we got back on the bus with our head, you know, in our hands and trying to figure out, like, are we this bad or are they that, you know, incredible? And turned out to be the latter. We felt like when we left there, you know, we were looking at a top five, top 10 type team. They've proved it all year long. And just to see his play down the stretch in the biggest of big moments. I mean, they're down 10 with 3.5, 4 minutes to go against Texas Tech, and to be able to win that game in the manner in which they did, they're special. They are absolutely special. They're hard to keep off the glass. They come at you in waves, and they've got a killer when the game's on the line.
Now, on the flip side, you have Bruce Pearl, right, who's been around forever. What he's done at Auburn has been sensational. Yep. In 2009, he's coaching Todd Golden in the Maccabi games. Then you have Bruce Pearl coaching with Todd Golden when he first got to Auburn. I know relationships are basketball, and that's a big part of this game. But does it give one coach an advantage over the other when both are so familiar with each other?
You know, I think that probably depends on, you know, the type of players they have and how much scouting they do. Some teams are just really more hell-bent on worrying about themselves rather than getting into all the weeds of what an opponent does. especially when you have to turn the page in a quick turnaround from Saturday to Monday. Of course, these guys have ample time to prepare for one another. I don't think there's necessarily an advantage in terms of, you know, one guy knowing a little bit more or having a little bit of an edge versus the other. It's going to be a great game. Both teams have high level athletes, have systems they really believe in. And so I think it's going to be a great game. You know, I do give the edge to Florida just because, again, I go back to Walter Clayton. I think he's a little bit more reliable than Pettiford, a guy that's a freshman. And so they're both really good, and I wouldn't be surprised if either one of them advanced.
We know that Kelvin Sampson had to spend a few years away from the game. Also, Bruce Pearl as well, right? You had to spend a few years away before getting this job at the College of Charleston. Just how do you, when you get that next opportunity, kind of reinvent yourself and make the most out of the opportunity?
Well, I think it's a matter of, you know, how did I spend the time away? And so, you know, you learn different things. You know, when you're actually coaching your team and you're in it day to day, you're really in a cave with you, your assistants, and your team. Maybe from time to time, you'll call some colleagues and ask for advice, but you're so hunkered down with your team that you don't really have an opportunity to really study others and maybe take in a practice or two. I spent a lot of time around Kelvin Sampson in my 2 years away. I spent at least three trips down there just sort of listening and, you know, following their defensive identity and how he carves that day in, day out, how he coaches his best player, his point guard, you know, things that, you know, I think you good coaches sort of steal from everybody a little bit and try to make it how they see it for their program. And so that time away, that was the time that I feel like I got to branch out and sort of see some different things that maybe I would apply once I got back into it.
Chris Mack here with us. Kelvin Sampson, so I went to Temple University, so I saw what he did in the American Athletic Conference, yeah. And then he goes to the Big 12. You know, it's weird to call Houston a dynasty because they haven't won a national championship yet, and what we do, it's kind of, all right, dynasties and the NFL and basketball, it's three championships, but what he's been able to do and take this level of Houston to this new standard, multiple conferences, tons of years of success. It's just hats off to him. Remarkable.
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, people, you know, probably realize that follow college basketball. I mean, you know, Houston was a wreck of a program when he took over. Yeah. I don't think it was a very desirable job. You know, he goes to the American, he absolutely kills it. And I think there was a little bit of skepticism. Okay, we'll see what happens when he gets to the Big 12. And they've gotten better. They've actually gotten better. And I don't think that he's done it necessarily with household names. From time to time, he'll get a five-star. But for the most part, he's getting these obscure guys out of high school, you know, that are long, that have potential. And he gets them to play so gosh darn hard that when you watch a Houston team, you know what you're getting. And I think this year, you know, with his guards, you know, whether it's Sharp, you know, whether it's LJ Cryer, whether it's the transfer point guard from Oklahoma, he's got some dudes that are capable of scoring. And obviously he's going to need that on Saturday.
How do you find a way to slow down Duke and be in it in the final few minutes to have your chance to go to the championship game on Monday?
It's a tough ask. You know, they've been sensational here, especially the last month of the season. You know, I think it's so underrated how difficult it is for teams to score around the basket. You know, so much attention is given to Cooper Flagg, and rightfully so, how talented he is on both ends of the floor. But, you know, Malwich, I mean, what he does around the rim and, you know, it's so hard to score too around the basket that the pressure that Duke can apply on the perimeter overwhelms you. And so, Houston's got to do what they do best, and that is defend. And then they got to figure out a way that maybe they can get some turnovers. Maybe they can offensive rebound against those guys and get some stick backs. Maybe they can get a Cooper Flagg in foul trouble. But again, that's a big ask, and that's going to be a really difficult challenge for the Houston Cougars. But if anybody's up to it, you know, what he's done and the times where they've played, you know, teams like a Kansas on the road and come away with a victory, you know, show that they have some credibility to do so.
Outside of the campus that you're currently on, just being absolutely beautiful, mm-hmm. what stood out to you this year, looking back at your number one at the College of Charleston?
Well, I would say that, you know, it was chaos in the very beginning. I think most coaches, when they go from, you know, one job to another, they generally bring their entire coaching staff. You know, I was on the beaches of Florida, not coaching. And so while I had a bunch of colleagues and guys that I thought of that if I were to be back into it, that I'd pick up for the staff, I still hadn't been with those guys in a couple of years. And so that was a huge challenge. You're trying to assemble a roster. You're trying to assemble a coaching staff, and you're trying to do it with some type of continuity. I think a year from, you know, a couple days ago, we now have stability with our coaching staff. We know what we're about. So again, I think the transfer portal teams are going to be very, very, you know, fluid from year to year. There's going to be a lot of change, but to have stability with your coaches and sort of know what we're about, I think gives us a leg up. And we had a really good year. But you know, we want to win a championship. We want to play in the tournament and we intend to do so.
Yeah. I always say about your university now, you know, I saw Jeff Goodman when Pat Kelsey was there doing a stroll, and it was like an unbelievable, really nice piece. I go, if that campus can make Jeff Goodman look good, man, it must be a real beautiful campus.
It is. I mean, it's one block off of King Street, which, if anybody's been there, is the heartbeat of Charleston, you know, from restaurants to open air bars to high end shopping. I mean, just tourists everywhere, bachelor parties, bachelorette yeah. parties. And then, you know, you've got beaches in any direction 10 minutes away. It's just a weather year round. It's a great place for to be a college student. It's a great place to be a basketball coach. And, you know, we're trying to combine, you know, what we do well as a staff with what Charleston brings to the table, and hopes that we can have a team that CAA champions.
There's more change than ever now in yeah. college basketball, players and coaches, right? You've been to Xavier, you've been to Louisville, and we know what you've been able to do. When you're at your current school, people are always going to throw your name, and it's a credit to what you do, in the mix for other jobs that are perceived to be bigger. You know, just this morning, I'm seeing your name get floated out there for Texas A&M. Just how do you address that with your players? Because we've seen in this tournament, right, Will Wade do it one way, Kevin Willard do it another way, and there's really no right answer, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't think there is a right answer. And, you know, sometimes things that they get talked about, you know, publicly or in the media aren't necessarily true. And so it's hard to dispel, you know, rumors. You know, I feel great about being at Charleston. You know, I'm not going to Texas A&M. You know, it's never been a consideration. You know, I get flattered, as any coach would, when opportunities, you know, come around. But they have to be right for me and my family. If that time, you know, ever came where I felt that, you know, there was a better opportunity for our family, then I'd address it with our team. But, you know, right now I have no intention of being anywhere else but Charleston. And Texas A&M, you know, they've got a great program. They're SEC. It's high level, but it's not for me, and it's not the fit that I would want for my family at this time.
Right now, entering this 2025 season, I know it's early, where do you think you're at as a basketball coach?
I think you're always evolving. I think that the portal has made it wild. You know, this time of year, I don't think it really changes anything when you actually get your guys and you get them in summer school, June and July. You're certainly building towards, you know, the season. When you're out there coaching your players, when you're watching film with them, you know, all the things that we do, every coach does on a daily basis, road trips, being together, bonding, you know, fighting for a championship together. None of that stuff changes. What changes is the spring. And just the roster volatility and being able to be accepting of that, adapted to that, has allowed me, you know, to have peace of mind with that, you know, and it's always been a relationship business, you know, how you develop relationships with the student athletes that you're coaching, and you can still have that, but it is very, very different. It's not as long lasting at times. It's a little bit more transactional. I don't necessarily think it's great for the game, but it is what it is. And, you know, again, we're going to try to do the best job that we can for our student athletes. And I'm always going to be grounded in that as a coach.
Well, last thing I'll ask you, Chris Mack. So I understand, right, Xavier fans obviously wanted to keep Sean Miller. When I look at it from afar, I totally get why he elected to go to Texas. I don't crush him for it whatsoever. But give me a thought or two about Sean Miller going to Texas and then Richard Pitino taking over with Xavier.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Sean's an elite level coach, elite. And I know that he's always wanted to get to a Final Four. And I'm of the belief that Xavier and Texas, you know, can get to a Final Four. You know, a lot of things have to happen, have to be put in place. You know, I think I can't speak for Sean, you know, why he made that jump. You know, every coach's decision-making process is different. But I do know that Texas is going to be really happy with the coach they have. He's an ass kicker. He is truly one of the best coaches in the game. He taught me a lot. And at the same time, who Xavier's replacing Sean with is a terrific coach in his own right. I think as a young guy in the Big Ten, you know, he took some lumps at a school that not isn't not necessarily a Big Ten contender every year, let's be honest. I think he learned a lot. He went to a place that has a very passionate fan base in New Mexico. He crushed it there. And so I think he's young. I think he's energetic. I think he'll bring a passion, you know, to the people of Cincinnati and Xavier University in particular. And so I wish him well. It's my alma mater. It's where I played. Not too well, because I want to be the all-time winningest coach for a long time. And, you know, he's got a few years to get there.
Well, we talk about things that are out there, right? And who knows if they're true or not. Were there any legs to some of the rumors of maybe you going back there?
I mean, again, you know, we were in consideration. We considered it as a family. Again, Charleston's such a special place. I don't think people understand until they actually put their feet on the ground there and what our fans, you know, have done for the program, the loyalty they've showed. You know, so again, for us, Xavier's a great place and it'll always be home for me.
Sure.
But Charleston has really become a special place and our sort of home away from home. So I'm very happy where I'm at. And I think Xavier's in a good spot with Coach Pitino.
Well, Coach, we really appreciate the time. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So there you go. Chris Mack joining us live on the show, the head basketball coach at Charleston, formerly of Xavier and Louisville. And he made it clear he has no interest in going to Texas A&M, with that being speculated in the last 24 hours. Also, let me tell you to stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs features and helps you stand out and hire fast. Start at Indeed.com/credit. Also, Werner is the official ladder of NCAA March Madness and the official ladder of construction professionals everywhere. Conquer new heights with Werner, available nationally at Lowe's. Zach Gelb here with you. Westwood One's coverage of the NCAA Final Four is brought to you, obviously, with our fine folks at Westwood One. We will take a break. We'll come on back. We'll do a little onside, offside on a Friday. Nate Oates is going to join us 25 minutes from now. We'll give you some picks before we go. And we also want to give a public on-air thank you to our guy Charlie for setting up this entire thing and continuing to book guest after guest after guest and great coaches that you've heard all through the last 2 days. Back with more from San Antonio.